Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. Joining me for this episode is my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on The Lost Stars Tarnished Night, which is the first book of the Lost Stars series, which is the third series in the Lost Fleet series. This is what, book 12, I think?
Sixth and five, yeah. 12.
Lose count. It's hard to keep track. Mm-hmm. And I'm numbering these episodes based on the order we're reading them in.
Mm-hmm.
This series technically it was published in interleaves with the Beyond the Frontier books that we finished.
Which frustrated me. I wanted footnotes occasionally to say, in case you were wondering, this is where we are at in the previous series.
Yeah, I was a little frustrated by that because I was trying to figure out where we were between the two. And it had been long enough since I'd read the first of that, of the Beyond the Frontier. I couldn't really place the stuff between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And I get kind of why that is. And if I had really appreciated that they were going to interleave that way, I might have suggested we bounce between them. But I don't know that that would have worked well for us either.
I don't think so. I think having an immersive experience with the characters is more to my liking.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at too. I'm trying to think though, because the two main characters in this book, unlike all the others, where Blackjack Gary is the lead character and we never leave his side.
Mm-hmm.
Here we've got two characters. We've got, and they're both in the Syndic world, CEO Arthur Draken, who later renames himself to a general.
Mm-hmm.
And then CEO Gwen Iceni, who later renames herself to president.
And I like some of the titles she considered on her way to president.
Yes. There was a lot of, I don't want to say power struggle type stuff, but a lot of, okay, we get to redo our society. How do we want to conversations? But we're bouncing between those two points of view.
Yes.
And I was a little worried going into this that maybe what I was enjoying about the Lost Fleet stuff was part and parcel of Blackjack Gary's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And these were both likable characters. I think since we started with Draken, that I kind of, I don't want to say sided with him more than Iceni, but that was kind of my default point of view, if you will.
I understood his thinking and his flaws better.
I think he was a more interesting character.
Mm-hmm. Iceni was harder to get a handle on because Draken was very straightforward. I want to build a world worth fighting for.
Yeah. Well, and Iceni was always struggling for why is she doing what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think Draken had a clearer moral compass, or at least a better exposed one to us.
Yes. You know, he was the one that we knew others fight for him because when it comes down to it, he will stand for you and with you.
Yeah, he supports the people under him.
Mm-hmm.
And has a lot more trust in them than Iceni seems to have.
And really, he is the Tarnished Knight the book was about.
He is, although that comes out like at the tail end.
Yeah.
Now, in this book, we never get a physical description of him.
Mm.
And I'm trying to remember if when we saw him in Beyond the Frontier, if we did.
We got more of a, I want to say a stature in terms of he sits at a desk, how he holds himself. He holds himself as the kind of officer you can respect.
Well, and I think he was standing behind the desk that Iceni was sitting at or something of that sort or what have you. And I don't recall if we got a physical description of, i.e. a casting sheet. If you were to cast him, who does he look like?
But I was thinking more you could visualize where he was and the posture of the man, if you will.
The bearing he has, yes. Because
mm-hmm.
the more I was reading about this, he was older than the two people who were his aides and, you know, lieutenants or what have you, whether they were technically lieutenants, but you know what I mean, mm-hmm. his subordinates. He struck me as middle-aged or older. Although in this world, it's hard to know how old people are because they seem to be really young and inexperienced, yet they could be 40, 50, 60 years old in the Alliance.
Yeah.
That was the part that always kind of was weird. But the casting I would use for him is I would go with Tony Amidala.
Oh, yes.
Played Braytac on Deep Space Nine. He played, who did he play in Continuum? Because he was in the first season or two of that as the rebel leader.
Yeah, I can't think of the character's name, but yeah.
This seemed like the sort of character he would just do perfect with.
Yeah.
You know, the moral qualms, but the certainty in other areas.
And inspires others.
Yes. A leader, a military leader of sorts.
Yeah.
But not a dictator or something like that. So I thought he was a fun character to watch. And bouncing between his point of view and Iceni's point of view, they're in this together because they kind of had to be.
Yes.
And they're still feeling each other out of, well, can we trust him? Can we not? The whole bit with the Syndic world is you really can't trust anybody. And I thought the power play, the who can you trust, and all of that was a fun part of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when at one point they're going to a neighboring system offering help, and the people are like, well, why are you doing this?
Yes.
And it is enlightened self-interest.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of those things I enjoyed about this, and it felt like almost a cautionary tale of sorts of be careful who you pick as your leader, because maybe they're looking out for you, maybe they're not.
Well, it was also a cautionary tale in terms of precedents you set.
Yes. By doing this, you say it is acceptable.
Yeah. Well, and they were having a lot of discussions and facing a lot of quandaries about establishing their government. And in that sense, those were the precedents they were setting. And like one of them was, we know this individual is guilty.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen undeniable proof he's guilty. Why bother with a trial?
Yeah.
Because the first time you say trials are not necessary, you've set the precedent.
Well, and at another point when Iceni realizes she may have accidentally gotten somebody killed.
Yes.
By telling somebody to just go take care of this. And in the past, that usually meant get rid of them.
Yeah.
And the guilt she feels and the realization that she's got to be more careful with what she says. And because that had been acceptable behavior in the past, if you go to the person you think did it and say, well, don't do that, they'd say, do what? Because you need the deniability.
Yes.
So the paranoia in this society.
Well, and they had the snakes who were basically spying on the entire planet for the government. So there was a basis for the paranoia.
Absolutely. It was very much a almost the German SS sort of, you know, mixed with almost a Ferengi level of corruption.
I think a lot of the culture in this book made sense because of the previous books.
I think if we had not read those, while it would have told us how the Syndic worlds were, we wouldn't have had the slow introduction an explanation of it.
We wouldn't have had the people that the Syndics simply left behind because it was a waste of money to evacuate them out and relocate them. So we wouldn't have understood how disposable the Syndics considered their own citizens to be.
Yeah, we would have lost the context we got in the other books. There were things up front where it was saying, you know, don't go in here or you're subject to life termination or, you know, we'll kill you. That kind of gets the point across of life is not valued. And there were a lot of things of, well, the CEO would do this because they know they're being watched or this or that. So it's spelled out for us. But having read 11 novels where we're on the other side of a war with the Syndics and getting to learn what was what the Alliance thought of them, some of it was accurate, some of it was not. But it gave us a lot more exposure and understanding of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it set the scene for this really well.
Yeah, it did.
I think if you were to start with this novel, you may come out of it with a different read than having known who Blackjack was, having seen all of those adventures. Because here he's mentioned a number of times, but in that mythical, you know, war hero sense, not as really a person.
Yes.
I think this did a lot to flesh out the universe and getting again that other point of view. You know, it'd be like watching a couple of seasons of a TV show set on, say, the American side of World War II, and then watching a show done in tandem with that from the other side.
When there's a story, and I've always wondered if it's true, that Hogan's Heroes aired in Germany.
Mm.
But they cut it together differently. And among other things, they changed the opening credits, and the Germans were the ones that were first mm-hmm. in the opening credits. And then they changed up the ending slightly so the Germans didn't look like complete fools.
I'm curious if that's true or not.
Me too. I've always wondered.
And I could see where you could do that. I just think it would be hard to get an American cast to do the endings that made the other side look good.
Oh, it wasn't done with the cast. It was done with the editing and the voiceovers.
The voiceover I could see doing it, but you'd still need one or two key people to do that.
Yeah, I've always wondered. I mean, yeah. I can see changing the credits.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we've often seen how a movie or even a next week episode preview, just by how you cut it together, can make a movie look like it's a drama, a comedy, a romance, or whatever when it's not.
Yes.
So I could definitely see that. The two right-hand people of Dracon, there was a female and a male. The female was Ro Morgan, and the male was Bran Maelyn. And they were just his go-to, you know, what do you think, and go do this type people.
And he allowed them to debate with each other, which in their society was a rare thing.
Yes. There was something going on between those two. And I had a theory, but right before we recorded, I double-checked one or two things. And it kind of flies in the face of my theory. Because at one point, Bran Maelyn appears to try to shoot Morgan.
But saves her life.
Saves her life. And is very adamant he wasn't trying to kill her.
Yeah.
And there was something about the way that played out that I'm like, I believe that.
Yeah.
But then the question is, well, why was he trying to save her?
Mm-hmm.
Well, her backstory is kind of weird in so much as she was part of a syndic operation where they put some people in a hollowed out asteroid, hurled it at the Enigma race slow enough that it wouldn't seem suspicious. They're in like a cryo sleep kind of a thing.
And magically gonna wake up at the right time.
Yeah. To spy on them and somehow send a message back with no expectation of survival.
Yeah.
Yet somehow that she's able to get rescued, to survive, all this stuff, just so they can try to, the syndic can try to figure out, well, how did the Enigma race know these were...
The Enigmas destroyed all but two of the asteroids. Because as they got really close, something gave away the asteroids.
Yes.
And so they didn't bring back the last two because they wanted to save the people. They brought them back to figure out basically what they did wrong that gave away the asteroids to the enemy.
Well, and what we know from the other books is it was probably
the worms.
The worm in the software that was basically a beacon saying, we're here, we're here.
Yeah.
But she was in that kind of cryo sleep or whatever they called it in this book for about 2 decades
mm-hmm.
or more or something. Yet she seems to be about the same age as Maelyn,
mm-hmm.
which made me start to wonder, it's like, why do that? What would make that relevant? And she'd also had mental conditioning, so she couldn't give up secrets, whatever. And I'm thinking, what if she were pregnant right before that? Had a kid that was given up who grew into Maelyn.
Yeah. I wondered about stuff like that.
He knew and she didn't.
Yeah.
But there's enough in his backstory, because at one point, one of Iceni's people is researching those two, because again, both sides of Iceni and Dracon don't know and don't trust each other.
But his mother, as I recall, worked at a classified medical research facility, yeah. and his father is unknown.
Classified medical research facility that could have facilitated that and adopted the kid.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
So I'm wondering if that, how this plays out at some point. Something is going on there.
Yeah, I think there's some connection along those lines that they tried to plant seeds for.
Well, and given how the seeds of the Enigma race were planted on the first novel of The Lost Fleet and slowly played out, I'm willing to give the author some credit for planning ahead.
And I think he's doing better in terms of, I think he's trying to build a relationship between Dracon and Iceni,
mm-hmm.
much as he did between Gary and as Johnny, but yeah. I think he's doing an infinitely better job here.
Yes, I think so. And part of it is because we see both sides of it.
That's part of it. But part of it also is I think he made the decision earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing a slower roll with it. Because in the other series, Des, Johnny, and Gary simply looked at each other as friends and coworkers. And then suddenly it's, you were always the perfect person for me and I just didn't see
it. They kind of drifted over the line. Whereas here, these two are starting out at not butting heads or whatever, but with an innate friction because of the situation. They're working together because they had to, not because they want to.
Mm-hmm. And they're gradually discovering reasons to respect one another, to appreciate yeah. one another. And we're watching that friendship build in a much better way.
Well, we're seeing them lower their walls of defenses and stuff and admit mistakes and build bridges and stuff like that. Whereas just Johnny, when Gary was the fleet commander or whatever, it's like, well, she's got to follow him.
Yes. Yeah, we're watching the trust build.
Yeah. And I'm enjoying that because yeah. you can see where it's tenuous at places. It's getting pushed in places.
Well, when Dracon goes to Iceni and says, I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
I did not tell you a message was sent because I didn't know what the message was. I didn't know if it held any meaning. I was trying to get more information. I made a decision on whether or not you needed to know. And it may have gotten some of your people killed.
Mm-hmm.
And she realizes they don't actually have language for, I accept your apology.
That's not the kind of conversation that happened in the Syndic world. You yeah. never admitted weakness like that.
Yeah. And when she thinks it through and realizes, in your place, I would have done the same thing. Because you don't know if the information is either relevant or meaningful.
Those were the kinds of scenes where I was really, in my mind, kind of seeing Tony Amidala play that out.
Yeah.
Because he's a very skilled actor. I don't think he gets as much credit maybe as I think he should, because I think he could really sell those mm-hmm. scenes.
Yeah.
And again, if they were to do these as, be it Netflix shows or movies, TV, whatever, getting the right couple of people in a couple of positions, I think, really matters.
Yes.
And for me, Dracon is kind of that anchor in this series.
Yes.
Iceni, I think, is really important, but I think you've got a little more wiggle room there.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly don't know who I would cast for that.
I don't know. I think Rogero is important, and I'm glad we learned more about him here. But he was one of the key reasons I kept trying to figure out where we were in relation to the other books.
Yes, because he's the flip side of the cross-alliance Syndic world romance that we'd seen on the Beyond the Fleet stuff.
Yeah.
Or Beyond the Frontier stuff. Sorry.
Yes, sorry. Yes.
Yeah, I thought having him in there, seeing his side of it, was interesting. And there's a lot of seeing people through other people's eyes in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And just the number of different vantage points we get when either Morgan or Malin is describing somebody and Dracon's like, no, here's what's going on. Or then we see somebody else's side of it. It's a lot more perspective than we got, I think, in some of the Lost Fleet stuff. Even there, though, when we would hear some of the other captains, well, clearly you're in charge of everything, Blackjack. We could see their perspective through what they were saying.
Yeah.
Well,
it was interesting the number of times that particularly Iceni, but to a degree Dracon, they were trying to figure out, am I still basically part of this dual leadership? Or is the image being created that we're not equals? Or is the image being created that one of us is trying to push the other out?
The realization that what the people think might matter.
Yes.
And what each other thinks does matter.
Yeah.
And how if one of them says the wrong thing at the wrong time or is perceived to have, it may be, oh, well, he's trying to take over.
Yeah.
And how both are wondering, should I strike against the other because they're going to strike against me? And how just by thinking that, they're almost causing it to happen, anticipating it.
Yeah.
Precipitating it.
Well, and occasionally they're basically saying some of that propaganda that we chided our superiors for using. I mean, it comes in handy. When the people are about to riot, remind them, you know, anybody encouraging rioting is acting against the safety of your homes.
Yeah. By painting the right picture of doing something is working against your own best interests or some such.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was some interesting things as to how to handle crowd control, rioting, and things of that sort. And how, like with the battleship that I seen these people capture, having these fortresses almost sealed bunkers inside the ship for the snakes to have secured the thing against the crew worked against the snakes when the crew used it to secure it against the snakes.
Yeah.
And then how Iceni's putting in basically backdoor access to those things, which were never meant to have backdoor accesses for the very purpose. It's like a, you know, a panic room kind of a thing.
Yes. Well, and several times there are people who either Iceni or Drakon, that's the only person they'll trust. You've become the face of what I believe.
Yes.
Is basically the message.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting is Drakon comes in with two subordinates he trusts pretty much implicitly. Not to say they can't mess up and make him question that. I think both get to that point. But with Iceni, she doesn't really trust anyone, but she's got one or two people, one that she's just now getting to becomes the fleet commander or whatever, that she's placing a lot of trust in and seeing the benefit of it. But then there's also Togo, who she trusts, but not implicitly.
Yeah.
And then there was also the one captain of one of the ships that she's kind of stuck with at first that winds up getting killed.
Yes.
And there's the whole question of, he's kind of an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Why was he still around?
And why was he assassinated? What did he know? What did he hold? Why did someone think he was worth assassinating? Didn't someone realize the promotion he got was because he was too stupid to be anywhere else?
And it also begs the question of who assassinated him.
Yes.
Likewise, who tried to take out a Rogero?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things. The book gets to a point where it's told the story it needed to, but the story's not done.
Yeah.
And it ended on kind of a cliffhanger, kind of not.
It's one of those where we know the next big threat coming, and it'll be interesting to see aspects of it from that other perspective.
Again, having read stuff in the Beyond the Frontier stuff, and this is one where if we were bouncing perspectives between books.
Yeah.
Because these four books in this series came out between the corresponding five books of the Beyond the Frontier. So I guess in that respect is kind of why I didn't feel it was a total cliffhanger, but it kind of sort of was.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel that this book kind of takes place between the first and second of the Lost or Beyond the Frontier stuff. I don't know.
I was thinking that the first Beyond the Frontier book referred to this one as a prequel.
I don't recall. I'd have to go look at when they were published and such.
Yeah.
I like maintaining the narrative flow, so I'm happy with the order we've read them in, but it does get to where having a timeline. One of the things I would love if the author did is put together kind of a timeline of events on the website such that you could say what you've read and it would, you know,
yes,
show those parts of the timeline and not the parts you haven't.
Yeah.
And also a actual map of particularly Syndic space.
Mm-hmm.
Because even in the books starring the Alliance, we're spending most of our time in Syndic space.
Yeah.
So just getting, again, a map of the territory would help.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were some other characters in here, but really, once we get past Malin, Morgan, obviously, Iceni, Drakon, we've got Mephissa, I think it was, that was the second in command for the ships that Iceni has. We've got two or three other people that are working with Drakon and commands of the forces and stuff, but they're more almost plot pieces than full characters.
But I think most of the ones you mentioned before you got to the plot piece characters were characters that were introduced or mentioned in Beyond the Frontier.
Maybe not in the first book, but absolutely in those books.
Yeah.
And Mephissa is the only one I'm not sure of.
She was in those.
Okay. All right. I just couldn't remember.
Yeah.
I think Togo is the one character that's a key player here.
Yeah, that we didn't see there.
That we didn't see there.
Yeah.
And would not have expected to.
Exactly.
So I was pleased with the cast of characters we got. It felt a little larger in some ways than what we tended to have with the Alliance group, even though it really wasn't.
I agree. And part of that, I think, is because we had kind of the land-based set and then the space-based set.
Well, and also, we're seeing a lot of these people. We're bouncing between the two perspectives, giving the world a bit more breadth that way. But it always seemed like there was just the random captain or whatever with Gary's fleet that was stirring up trouble or doing whatever. Whereas here, we've got almost a more personal up-close feel with these characters.
Yes.
Which I liked.
Yeah. Well, and we've gotten a lot of backstories. We know how Iceni got sent out to Midway. Well, and I guess that maybe that's a way to describe most of these characters. Most of them got banished or exiled to Midway, the planet they're on.
Yes.
And we got from almost all of them sort of that defining moment that got them exiled.
Yeah, they're the cast-offs of the Syndic worlds to a large degree, not the the long-lost war hero that Gary is.
Mm-hmm.
And we get the backstory, but in a lot of these cases, and it was the same way in the other books, and it's a credit to the author that it played well, a lot of it's coming out through exposition.
Yes. Well, and a lot of the flaws are kind of things that a corrupt government would find a flaw, but things that form a good foundation for a government.
Yeah.
So it made for a really interesting set of characters. I mean, Iceni's out there because she reported theft and fraud being committed by a government official.
Yeah, she found corruption. She reported it, not realizing the person she was reporting it to was in on the corruption.
Yeah.
And again, Drakon had, you know, protected one of his people and stuff. And it was like, well, why are you doing that kind of a thing?
Mm-hmm.
So he did what he thought was right and what we would think would be right.
Exactly.
But in that system, you got punished for that. It's, again, a oddly calibrated moral compass for that society.
Mm-hmm.
It worked because we had different people who had to go research and look into other people and stuff to get a sense of the backstory almost as a thump, here it is.
Yeah.
And often that's a little awkward way to do it. But you not only got that, but you got the reactions of people of, well, if that's so, how about this? Or
mm-hmm.
So, and again, there's a fair number of characters that we need to get the backstory of to get a bit of an understanding of why they're doing what they're doing, why they are where they are.
Yeah.
So I had highlighted a couple of things here and there. A lot of it was just trying to keep track of the names.
Mm-hmm. I can understand that.
But there was even a couple of lines where when Iceni is about to head off to go, I think, get the battleship or something like that, and she's talking with Drakon, he kind of ends it with, "And have a nice battle."
Yes. Yes.
I'm like, that's just funny.
Yeah. Well, they have a great argument, and I think it's at that point, it's very much a circular logic of you don't want to leave the star system because you're afraid I'll try to kill you. But the only way to guarantee I can't kill you is to leave the star system where you're out of my reach.
Yes. If you want to do what you're going to do, it makes sense for you to do it because it precludes me acting against you. And that argument gets turned around again and, you know, it.
Yeah.
But not to the point where it's like, well, that's a stretch. It's like, no, it kind of does make sense.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the Drakon and Iceni having to kind of both convince themselves and the other that this is the right way to go for both groups.
Well, and both of them have seconds that will stand up to them and say, basically, do you want to follow in the footsteps of a failed government and simply lash out and kill people versus do you want to form a government that's based on justice and things you can be proud of and what's right?
Well, and both of them realizing that the Syndic world had failed.
Yes.
It failed to protect them. It failed to win the war. It failed to do pretty much everything it set out to do, we may not do better, but let's not do what doesn't work.
Well, their exasperation, as they're saying, it took the enemy to coming and telling us that we lost the war and it's over.
Yes.
Because our own government couldn't even tell us the war was over.
Well, and they'd been going up against the Enigmas for, you know, 100 years, and here in the span of a year or two,
yes,
this other guy figures out how to deal with them.
Yeah.
There's almost that humiliation aspect.
Yeah.
It was interesting. Skimming through my notes to see what else. We did get the standard, this is how spacecrafts, you know, operate in an environment without an up or a down. And I'm not sure it's the exact same paragraph we've gotten in the other 12 or other 11 books, but it's close enough.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. We definitely got some use of the stealth suits. We'd seen those in the previous mm-hmm. books, but they were well used here.
They really were.
And this was one where sometimes we were actually with the people in the suits, not just kind of remotely, you know, watching them.
Yeah. There was one bit where they were talking about naming ships, and someone comments, oh, like the Alliance does, the inexplicable or the undesirable or the insufferable.
That's funny. Well, and I liked when Iceni was trying to figure out, well, do I name it after myself? Do I name it after someone else? What about this? And just kind of thinking through, if I do this, it kind of implies this is next, and oh, that causes this problem and that problem.
Yes.
And maybe the Syndic rulers had some decent thoughts when they decided not to do that.
Yes. Yeah.
And when she decides to use birds for this and certain names for that, it worked out, and I liked following the thought process.
Yeah.
There was definitely times, though, where I think both of them were thinking that they had options, but none of them were great, and they wanted to have, you know, maybe a good option once in a while.
Yeah.
There was actually a line or two like that. I forget which one said it, though, or was thinking it. I do want to know who was the assassin that was trying to take everybody out.
Yes.
I'm kind of leaning towards Morgan.
Interesting. Morgan seems to have an agenda all her own.
She has an agenda, as does Malin, but Malin seems to be more to defuse the situations.
Yeah.
Whereas Morgan seems to be more to incite the situations.
But I think even aside from that, Morgan has some agenda I haven't figured out.
I don't think she's working with the snakes or is along those lines, but she could be. And definitely she's got a clear game plan she's running down.
Yeah.
That was very clear. It was interesting, though, that both Morgan and Malin, in short order, like within pages of each other, are telling Drakon that everything I do is in your best interests.
Yeah.
And he even comments how, in short order, they basically said pretty much the exact same thing, even though they're working in very different ways.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what's going on with those two and where that's going to kind of play out. And again, the relationship between Drakon and Iceni, how that evolves, and what kind of power structure they wind up with, and what state the Midway system that this is all based in ends up at.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I just found I had highlighted a short bit back at the part where Iceni first realizes she may have accidentally given the kill order, and she's saying to herself, you know, for once in my life, I didn't want to do that. For once, I wanted to handle it right. And I might have ordered his death anyway.
Yeah.
And I loved how that was expressed. And like I said, the author does a really good job with flawed, very human characters. And I think that's why the characters are so interesting.
They're struggling to do the right thing.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's, I think, one of the things that makes this very different than the other Lost Fleet books, where, for the most part, it seems very easy for Blackjack Gary and Desjani to be doing the right thing.
There were times, though, when Desjani, like she was saying, you know, we kill all the prisoners. She had to be reminded what the right thing was.
True, true. I think, though, from her mindset, she had been doing the right thing, even though it wasn't the right thing.
Yeah.
Whereas here, they want to do, you know, not accidentally kill somebody, not just, you know, lash out and do what they didn't like having done to them and stuff. They just don't know how to go about it.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're having to dive, you know, 150 years into their history, to go find terms and names and other things to leverage harkens back to Black Jack Gary being a century out of touch.
Yes.
And it's like the mistakes of today can be corrected by the wisdom of the past.
Yes.
Seems to be definitely an underlying theme of these books.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying this. I thought this was a fun group of characters, and I want to see kind of where it goes, how it builds up, and how many kind of touch points we've got between this and the Beyond the Frontier stuff.
Mm-hmm. Was at the end, Iceni has another one of her thought passages.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "Perhaps I do have one knight, a knight of darkness and shadow, but maybe it's just his armor that is tarnished."
I highlighted that too.
"Maybe inside that armor is someone who is still capable of doing something that doesn't bring personal gain, who, as he told me, really does want something worth dying for."
It's that true meeting of the minds, and he may not just be saying that, he may actually mean that.
Yeah.
And that, to me, was part of why I felt he was the focal character of this book.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that in one of the next three, probably the next, Iceni becomes the lead.
Yeah. Well, and there's a sincerity to him in his actions and his words that she's coming to recognize and appreciate. She's so used to all CEOs being liars.
Yes. Well, and I like how they are rebelling against having been CEOs and operating that way while still leveraging the times it makes sense to do that.
Yeah.
You know, when she needed to get somebody's attention and get some quick answers, she just kind of pulled that CEO mode out and,
mm-hmm.
you know, got that. And
there's a voice people are used to responding to. There's a tone, but also certain questions and an attitude.
Yeah. Well, and there was a point at which they needed to kind of stall something out. And there are apparently CEO code words of reply, but don't resolve quickly.
Yeah.
You know, play for time.
Yes. Well, but it was interesting because Drakon asked her to play for time with someone, watched her do it really well, and then started wondering if she was doing the same thing to him.
Yes. It's like she's very skilled at that. Yes. And you could see him rethinking their interactions.
Yes.
Is she playing me? Again, that paranoia.
Yes.
So again, going into this, I was a little worried. Would I like it if they jumped perspectives and had a different vantage point than Gary? And I did. I admit I like Drakon's perspective a lot more than Iceni's.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt he was a more interesting and relatable character for me than she was. And I don't think she was as well developed. She was developed.
He was more approachable. She was more guarded.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think for me, that's, I agree with you, but because of that difference, I think,
well,
more of her barriers need to drop.
Yes, more of her barriers need to drop. We need to get more in her mindset, and she needs to find herself.
Yes.
He knew who he was.
Yeah.
That, to me, was the big difference.
Well, and I think there was a point in the book when one of the two of them, and I forget which it was basically going along the thought process of, how did he manage to go through CEO training and rise that high and still maintain the ability to care about others, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah.
It was just, he was such an anomaly.
Yeah.
You know, he was someone who cared about people and trusted people to the point that he told Ruggiero to basically go to the snakes and say, "I'll be your spy in Drakon's camp. Why mm-hmm. don't you send me out there?" And when, I guess it was Malin finds out about this, or was it Morgan?
Both. Morgan was upset about it. Malin had already known, I think.
Yeah, so I guess it was Morgan who's saying, you are wicked crazy to give the snakes a plant.
Yeah, to plant a spy in your own midst.
Yeah. He's like, but this way I know who their spy is.
Yes. And when she realizes that, it's like, that's brilliant.
Crazy, but brilliant.
Yeah, which makes me wonder if the spy that Iceni has in Drakon's camp, if he had facilitated that.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to, over the next three books, the two camps merging into one.
Yes.
And hopefully that happens.
But yeah.
We'll see. So again, I enjoyed this. I thought it was a lot of fun. And it had all the aspects I've been enjoying about the Lost Fleet series. yet it was charting new ground and gave us a very different perspective on this universe.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very good read.
So, anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.